You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Updates on the Russian treason arrests with side suspicions of underworld infighting. A principal victim of Shamoon 2 says that it has now recovered. IoT threats and the risk of always-on, always-listening devices. French security officials warn that cyber jihad could enlist cyber mercenaries. Cisco patches its telepresence software. And don't worry, no one really got locked into their rooms at that posh Alpine resort. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Monday, January 30th, 2017. Counter to some expectations late last week, the arrest of Kaspersky security researcher Ruslan Stoyanov has begun to look like an actual espionage case as opposed to the corruption beef many suspected. Sergei Mikhayov, deputy chief of FSB's Center for Information Security, has also been arrested, with Novaya Gazeta and Radio Free Europe reporting over the weekend that the men are charged with passing information to the Americans. A third man, FSB Major Dmitry Dokochayev, was also arrested in the sweep. Krebs on Security thinks the treason dust-up is related to suspicion over who's been leaking unflattering material about Russian leaders to the gadfly blog Shalte Bolte. That's the Russian equivalent of Humpty Dumpty. And this, in turn, he suspects is connected to long-running grudges among figures in the Russian cybercriminal underworld. Novaya Gazeta also reports that Mikhayov is thought to have provided information about hosting service King Servers to U.S. intelligence services. King Servers is owned by Russian national Vladimir Fomenko. His servers were used as a platform for hacks of Illinois and Arizona state election systems in 2016. Those attempts are generally unattributed, but are thought by some observers to be connected with Russian security services. Another one of Fomenko's customers was the Russian electronic payment entrepreneur Pavel Rublevsky, whose company ChronoPay was implicated in various cyber attacks on Russian companies. Rublevsky was arrested in 2011 and convicted in a Russian court in 2013. Fomenko says he has no connection to any hackers or cyber criminals who might have made use of King's servers. Radio Free Europe says Mikhailov testified in court that he, quote, knew Vrublevsky and his talents well, end quote. The story is, as they say, developing. Saudi Arabia's Sadara Chemical Company says it, or more precisely Symantec, hired by Sadara, has completed remediation of the Shamoon attack the company recently sustained. But the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia remains concerned about further infestations, especially since it strongly suspects Iran as the source and origin of the regional malware threat. This suspicion is widely shared. Iran has taken some shots at targets in the U.S. as well, mostly in the financial sector, and one famous intrusion into the controls of a small flood control dam in downstate New York. Iran may have demonstrated some hacking chops, but its Islamist rival, ISIS, so far, has not. That happy situation may not last long. Guillaume Poupard, director of the French security agency ANSI, warned at a conference last week that while jihadist groups have so far shown little hacking ability, this could change rapidly should digital mercenaries sell the groups their services. The mercenaries could do so inadvertently, given the anonymity of much black market information sharing. And of course, hacking aside, such groups have shown considerable facility with influence operations. Cisco has discovered and patched a remote code execution vulnerability in its Telepresence Multiport Control Unit, MCU, software. Fixes are available for the MSE 8510 and 5300 series models. The 4500 model is also vulnerable to the remote code execution flaw, but it won't be patched. It reached its end of life last July. Last week, we heard allegations that U.S. Cellular had sustained a breach, and we noted that the telecom provider had found no sign that it had been compromised. U.S. Cellular confirmed to us early this morning that the purported breach is bogus. The data posted in Hacker Fora didn't come from any U.S. Cellular database. And finally, ransomware hit a resort hotel in Austria last week, specifically a picturesque lakeside alpine four-star hotel. Reports were more than a little breathless, claiming that guests had been locked into their rooms. That didn't happen, and apparently isn't possible, because fire codes require that hotels let you out of your room whatever electronic state their locks may be in, as hotel manager Christoph Brandstetter pointed out to Bleeping Computer. Nor were guests locked out, either. Apparently, what did happen is that the hotel's ability to make new keys was impaired, and that this is what the extortionists held at risk. While not as lurid as initial reports had it, the incident is nonetheless further evidence of the way cyber extortionists are turning to the Internet of Things as ways of disrupting businesses. In the meantime, don't worry about getting locked into your hotel room. Worry about that free Wi-Fi instead. Joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Joe, welcome back. You know, we had a story recently on the CyberWire about this this little caper that happened with the Amazon Alexa.
Right.
Where a news organization in San Diego announced that actually we've started calling her She Who Will Not Be Named so right. as to not activate her.
That's a good policy.
Among our listeners, yes. But this news story summoned the name, and many people within their listening area, without knowing it, ordered a dollhouse over the thing. So I wanted to address this issue of these always-on listening devices. There are several of them.
Right. There's the Alexa. You know, you've got the, I don't want to say the OKGOOGLE because my phone's sitting right next to me.
Right, right.
And then you've got Cortana from Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they're always on. And Amazon's done something where they've made the device a separate device that you keep in your home. And I'll tell you, as a I'm an Amazon Prime member,
yep.
And when this came out, I got a special offer that said you can get an Amazon Echo in your house, and we'll sell it to you as an Amazon Prime member early for $99. And I was like, ooh! And it sounds very exciting, very very cool. And I go home and I mention it to my wife, and she goes, "I can't believe you of all people want to put a bug in your house."
That's right. That's
and I,
right.
It took my wife telling me that this thing is essentially always listening, and you don't know what the what it's storing and what it's not storing. Amazon says the only thing they're storing is the information after you say the keyword to open it up.
Right. They say it has like a 60-second buffer, and it's not
right.
actually sending, you know, your raw audio to Amazon. But, you know,
it's sending something to Amazon that represents your raw audio because they're doing a search on it.
Right.
Whether that's a Soundex that gets processed on the machine in your home or something, it's enough information to understand what you've said.
But, you know, it also got me thinking about how, you know, like on my laptop computer, you know, like a lot of people, I have a piece of tape over the camera on the computer.
I have that, too, on my laptop.
But that you can't really do that with a microphone.
No, you can't. And that's actually an interesting thing. I've heard at the Department of Defense, they open up your new laptop and they disable the microphone right off the bat. That's one of the first things they do. Also, at home, I have a big old tower PC that mm-hmm. is my main PC. I enjoy playing video games, so I like to have a nice PC that I can upgrade and swap out parts for. And that's great, but it's not exactly a portable machine.
Right.
These portable machines are essentially not user serviceable. So when you have a microphone that's built into these portable machines, you have very little control over it. And we've seen that in our research with Matthew Brocker and Steve Checkaway probably around 3 years ago, found a way to turn on the older MacBook cameras mm-hmm. without notifying the user with a little LED, green LED.
Wow.
What I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see hardware manufacturers offer a way for me to physically disconnect these devices from the rest of the computer. Not with software, but to physically throw a switch and have these things no longer hot, as it were.
So swinging back to the Alexa, you know, Amazon right. says you can change the word that summons her.
Right.
So that seems like a pretty good thing to do right off the bat there to protect yourself from people accidentally purchasing things for you.
Right. And there's also parental controls you can put in. I actually have an Amazon Fire TV uh-huh. and my nephews came over one day and they're 4 and 5 and they were just playing with the remote and ordered some video that kind of look like it might be a good kids video and charge my account $3, you know.
There you go. That's how they get you.
Exactly. It was an inexpensive way for me to learn the lesson to put parental controls on it. You know, everybody in my house knows the parental control codes, but my 4-year-old nephew doesn't.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a matter of what, you know, the kind of security that you need to be usable.
All right. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.